Good morning. This is Sunday, September 18th. We are continuing our talks based on journal entries, which are things that have come to me powerfully in meditation, and the chapters of the book The Mystical Eye by Joel Goldsmith. This week's chapter is Chapter 8, I Speaks. And what does that mean? Just those two words. Well, in the Kahlua Study Series, hopefully, we practice the principles which Joel gave us. Actually, the Christ of your being, and the Christ of my being, and the Christ of all being gave us through Joel. And one of those principles was, or is, when you're confronted with a problem, you don't battle. You don't join in the battle. You don't deny, you don't affirm. You say, there's no answer to that. And you drop it. And you stand stock still. That's a tough principle, and he admits it. We have come, many of us, from the metaphysical path where we might use denials. There's no power in that. That wasn't made by God. It has no presence. It has no life. It's a nothing. And we might also use affirmations. Only God is here. God is the only power. God is the only presence. You see, but in the metaphysical days, when you're practicing principles mentally, that's acceptable. But here in the infinite way, those of us that have been following it for any length of time have discovered, A, that the mental no longer works, or B, there's something missing, and we know it. We can feel it. And so we go back and we look again, and yes, there it is. The beauty of when Christ speaks is that Christ speaks on 7 levels at the same time, and probably an infinite number of levels. And so we hear the message Christ utters based on the level we're at. And so Joel could be talking to an audience, and one person in the audience would hear this principle, and the other person in the audience would hear that principle. And so it's possible to read the Kahlua Study Series and come away, if you're on the level of metaphysics, come away with the idea that as long as I remember and repeat to myself, there's no answer to that, no answer to that. Only God is here, only God is here. I'm practicing the principle. But those of us that have come up higher and are ready for a purely mystical message or principle recognize that it's telling us, in fact, to die. Not only to die as we're walking around in our daily lives, or not only to die overall in our search for God, die to self, but even in our each and every meditation, we are to die. We are to die to that mind which would know truth, in order that we may come into the experience of truth. And so when we practice that, we begin to have these glimpses, these experiences, these inner I speaks within our being. Now, we may hear the word of God, which is spoken within our being, as an actual word. The very first time I ever heard it said, and I can still remember it because it was so loud, it thundered. and it said to me in my being, God needs no prayer. God already is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is, and it gave me the secret to prayer. Right then, right there. Before that, I thought that, I guess I must have felt like everybody else, that if I say the right prayer, I can influence God to bestow something upon me, or help me, or give me direction. But that's, well, it didn't work. And it doesn't work. You cannot influence the infinite. And the silly little mind that thinks it can influence the infinite. How silly. How really, truly ridiculous. No. And so, the voice told me, you can't influence God. God doesn't need your prayer. How silly. Stop that. It's man that needs prayer, because in prayer we remind ourselves to stand stock still. And then we stand still. And in that way we let God is. We come into the awareness of God ising, or the presence of God. And then God speaks. And we hear it sometimes as words, as I did that time. Sometimes as a feeling of the presence. Herb said he got the smell of perfume. He got lights, different colored lights. Some people have heard music, the music of the spheres, the heavenly music. And so there are all kinds of ways in which God's... Well, no, there's only one way in which God speaks, and that's on every level. But the way that you will hear that word, that voice, when I speaks, is dependent on where you're at, the level you're at. Okay, so, and also your conditioning and beliefs and all that. Now, it starts here with, in this chapter, within each one of us there is a presence, a something. And if you were going to, if you put me on the stand, and you asked me, and I put my hand on the Bible, and I swore to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. And you asked me if I knew if there really was a God, I would have to say yes. Yes, I know it 100%, 1,000%. I know there's a God. And then if you asked me how, I would have to say because in my meditations, and sometimes just walking around, sometimes even in my sleep, I feel the very living presence, or the presence of the living God, the now God, right here, and also everywhere. And then if you were to have a follow-up question, and you were to say, well, explain to us, describe that God, now we would have a problem. We would have a big problem, because I cannot describe God to you, or to anyone. I can't even describe God to myself. The very idea is ridiculous. Again, the mind trying to do something with the infinite. I could use terms, I could say, well, to me, it's an omnipresence. And it flows in my being, and I feel it. I feel that presence. But I don't feel it with my body. And yet, I feel it flowing through my body. I'm not aware of it with my mind. It's not a thought. It's an experience. And you see how nebulous and strange and weird that sounds. It's not a definition at all. And they would probably say, well, okay, we're going to excuse this person. You may step down and call somebody else, that perhaps a religious person that could explain it. Now, I brought all that up because I want you to know that there is a presence, there is a something, that is true. And you'll never be able to put that something in a box. And just when you think you have it figured out, it will appear in a different way. And let me tell you, some of those are really startling. So he says here, too often, however, because we are not aware of this presence, we are determined to live our own life. And this chapter, like the previous chapters and the chapters that are going to come, it has to do with dying to a personal sense of life so that you may bear witness to an impersonal presence living itself. And, of course, that impersonal presence is the I, which speaks. It's the I of you, and the I of me. It's also the I of our enemy, our worst enemy. We had Al-Qaeda, and then we had the Taliban. Now we have ISIS. And these are our, seems to be the enemies of the Western civilization. These are the terrorists that hurt, maim, and kill. Doesn't matter if they have a valid complaint or not. Because the way that they have taken up, the way of violence, is not the right way. And so these could be considered our enemies. Right? However, if we can't... Well, no, let's just put it this way. We must, you and I must, find a way to realize I in the midst of them. We must find a way to lift up that I. And this is called world work. And it's going to be discussed in this chapter. Joel felt it was very important to do world work. Now, too often, even though there is this divine presence, we are not aware of this presence. We are determined to live our own life. Yes, and we're determined to have enemies that have their own life. And we're determined to have friends that have their own lives. And we're determined to have family that have their own lives. That's a divided consciousness. The student can believe this, he says, only because it's told to him by a teacher who has experienced the presence. In one way or another, he says, there must come an awareness that there is a presence within. There must be an abiding in this truth until the capital E experience comes to our conscious awareness. When it does, it speaks. Fear not, I am with you. Now, the first time I felt this presence, actually the first time I ever felt this presence, I was walking down the street, and I must have been contemplating, and I must have reached that place where the mind became still, because I was walking to work down a boulevard with cars going by, and I suddenly felt this tingling, this otherworldly presence. And I remember I asked my spiritual teacher, Don, what is this? And he explained it was the presence. And I didn't know what he meant. But the next time I experienced it, I was reading The Art of Meditation by Joel Goldsmith. I put the book down. I closed my eyes for a moment, and before I could really get into thinking much, in that moment of stillness, I felt this presence on the side of my arm, on the side of my face. It was very gentle. It was a touch, almost an angelic touch. It was very soft, and with it came a sense of peace. And a tingling, inside, outside, hard to tell. But it moved through my being, and I felt it. Wow. Then I knew I had had the capital E experience. I didn't know how to live yet with it. I didn't know how to die so that it may live. And over the years, I've had to learn that. But that was the first time I experienced that presence. And I can honestly say that there are almost no days that go by since then, and that was 1973, there are almost no days that go by that I don't feel that presence at some time during the day. Sometimes it's very strong and it really moves, and I can see it talking through me or doing something, writing through me, or taking care of, even taking care of the taxes, things like that. Last year I was working on the taxes very hard. It took me about 8 hours to get everything together, all the paperwork, and I felt the presence, even as I am this very second. Right now I feel it on the right side of my scalp. I feel it inside, yet outside. Alright, so when I feel it, I want to just be still. However, if we had an hour of stillness, it might be very... I don't think too many people would listen to the talk. But it might be very powerful. You never know, huh? All right, so... the first time I felt that presence, I knew there really is a God. And what a joyous discovery. It was no longer in the books. It was no longer Joel's infinite way. I had felt the infinite myself, and it was my infinite way. All right, so he says there must be abiding in that until the experience comes into our conscious awareness. Yes. When it does, it speaks. Fear not, I am with you. And that's exactly what it was. Be at peace, I am here. Here's the peace that passes understanding. You cannot understand it, but you can feel it. Because I am here. And what a joy to know you're never alone again. He says, sometimes we feel that when we acknowledge God in us, or the Christ indwelling, we are indulging duality or two-ness. But this is not true. It cannot be explained logically to you, any more than God can be explained. But the truth is that this I within us, this presence of God, does not make for duality, because it is actually the self of our being. Yes, that is something that's very interesting about this to me, because later I had more and more spiritual experiences. I had the experience of, well, I told it to you. Got up in the morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. I went out to the couch. I had decided I wasn't going to meditate for a while, and I forgot because I was half asleep. And as I sat there meditating on only the presence is present, I felt that tingling on my left side. And then it went all throughout my body. And then it filled the room. And then it filled the house. And I knew the next step, it was going to fill its own infinity. And I would be one with that infinity. And it was quite startling. And I said, Father, I'm afraid. And then it diminished and dissolved and came back to where I was in normal consciousness. So, I knew beyond the shadow of a doubt, and from that and many other experiences, that the I that I am is that infinite eternal presence. I am that presence. That presence is I. Okay? Yet, like Joel, I still have also a feeling of me. There's me and the presence. But sometimes in my deeper meditations or in my deeper experiences, there's only the presence. And so, yes, I know that that presence is my true identity, my true self. Yet I permit myself to love the Father, or love that presence. And as he says here, it does not lead to duality. It leads to more and more experiences of oneness. And so, for a while, I suspect, like Jesus Christ, the most advanced infinite way student there ever was, the one that revealed it to Joel, I suspect that even there at the end, Father, why have you forsaken me? Father, into thy hands I commit my soul. I and the Father are one, you see. And yet it didn't diminish from him, from the moments and the periods and the experiences he had when he was able to say, if you see God, you're looking at me. Well, I know that Christ will come. I that speak unto thee am he. I am he that should come. In fact, I am that infinite way. I am the infinite truth. I am the infinite self, the life. So I'm not going to fight with it. Sometimes I feel it's my father, my dad. Sometimes I feel it's my friend. Sometimes I know it's I. So, God includes individual being, he says, just as the whole tree includes the branches. There's no such thing as the life of a tree and the life of a branch of the tree. The life of the tree is the life of the branch, as long as they are one. But from the moment the branch is severed from the tree, then that life withers. And so we're back to where we started in this chapter. We have a problem. The problem is that God is life. I am the life. And you and I, individually, we try to live our own personal life. And we're living an illusion. He says, the human being lives as a branch separate from the tree. There is a birth, and there is a death. And this would be your cone, K-O-A-N, something you meditate on this week. I give it to you. Find your life, which has no beginning, no end. Find your life that was never born and will never die. Find that life, and then be still, and I will speak to you. The human being lives as a branch separate and apart from the tree. There is a birth and there is a death. There is only one way in which this can be overcome, and that is to realize we have no branch life. We have no personal life. No life that has a beginning and no life that has an ending. We have no personal life. No personal responsibility. I am one with the life which is God. Now, this takes, I believe, many years to come into the conscious awareness where you're consciously aware you have no personal life. But God is living itself. I live. Yet not I anymore. Christ liveth. This takes many, many years because it's a shock. Oh, yes, you can say it intellectually. Yes, I have no personal life. Only I am the life, the presence. But that's not the same as that experience I had in my living room where I was about to disappear and the infinite was about to take over. That's quite different. That's definitely a capital E experience. Yet it must come. How can you be the infinite I, and how can you stuff that into a personal, well, into the branch, a personal life? Joel's told us over the many years, the whole problem is trying to live a personal sense of life. Personal sense must be overcome. And we smile sweetly. Yes, Joel. And then we go out and live a personal life and come into all sorts of problems. health, companionship, money. We have problems. Lack of money, I should say. Does that infinite eye have any of those problems? No. So we go back to the books. Well, I don't like it. I'd like to have my own life. I'd like to have my own ideas, make my own decisions. But I'm tired of the prodigal life. And so I go back and I look again. What do I have to do to die? And I begin to look at some of these deeper principles that are harder to swallow. I am one with the life of God. To bring this relationship into active expression, that is, into experience, in our lives, there must be a specific act. Oh, so now we're getting down to it. What kind of an act? Do I need to go to the store on Tuesday? Do I need to bow down 5 times a day? Should I say 100 Hail Marys full of grace? Should I spin my prayer wheel? What should I make some lamps and light them all? Should I light a candle? Should I light some incense? Should I sing? Should I pray? Should I chant? What should I do? What is the act? Oh no, my friend. All those are actions. They're out here. We must act. And that's in here. The act must be an act of consciousness. Something must take place within. You must die within. He says there comes a moment in our lives when we realize that we have lived as human beings. Yes. Now what? We have been the branch separate and apart from the tree of life. When we realize this, we perform an act. Okay, Joel, what is that act? It is an act in which we consciously make an about-face, from a human sense of life, and declare within, I have been living the life of a human being. Now I must return to the Father's house, to the Father's consciousness. Okay, so as we abide in this truth, there comes an experience. Okay, so I must go within myself. I must turn away from a personal sense of life in my meditation, and I must return or turn towards the Father's house, the Father's consciousness. And this I do when I stand stock still from the person, and I listen, and I wait before that consciousness. This is the invitation to I. And then I speaks. And when I speaks, and I live on that manna received within, and I live by that principle, then I am returning to the Father's consciousness. I'm not living by my personal wits, by my personal intelligence. I'm living by the Father's consciousness, by the consciousness springing up into everlasting life. I'm living from the deep within I, and what it speaks, what it utters. And that's the beginning. But there's more. It takes a specific act, several of them, within, in consciousness. I find out that, well, first he says, there comes an experience. I have never left you. I have never been separate or apart from you. I have walked with you every step of the way, awaiting your recognition. Long have I awaited you. Long have I awaited your awakening. Long have I awaited your return. Long have I awaited your recognition. Look within and find me. For I am within you. I am the very fabric, the very source of your life. Be not afraid. It is I. I am your staff of life. I am your wisdom. I am your bread. But I am this to all men. I am this in the midst of your friends and your loved ones. And I am this in the midst of your enemies. Recognize me in the midst of all. I greet you through those you thought were your enemies. It is I. I am that I am. The life of your enemies being, the life of your friends being. I am the life of all being. And so, here comes the second part. It's not enough to recognize, oh, I've made contact, the I is within me, and to rest in it, and to feel it and listen to it. That's not enough. Because then we exit our meditation, we get up, we do some chores around the house, then we go over and we turn on the TV and we hear the latest report on what the terrorists are doing. They've just bombed something in Italy or France or England. OMG. Oh my God. This is horrible. Look at the screaming people, the bloody people. Now what have I done? I think somehow I can recognize the I in the midst of me and look out there and still see personal sense. I have just crucified the Christ out there. Because the I is omnipresence, is everywhere, in every me. Friend or enemy. If I'm going to really do this, if I'm going to really do this world work, which is nothing more than the second part of my principle, I've got to see I in the midst of me everywhere. And so I've got to look that enemy right in the face, and I've got to see I. I can't do it while I'm concentrating on those pictures, so I've got to take it within, and I've got to drop that. And I've got to say the personal sense of self is nothingness. And so, there is no answer to that. None. Now let me be still. I am told that, well, I know I am omnipresent in every me. So, Father, reveal thyself. And then stand stock still. Now, your words may be different. But the inner experience will be the same. You will not just know God inside yourself. You will not just have an inner experience of the I only within you and then see these enemies. You will have the experience of I within you, knowing that I is also within all. Even where that appears, that horrible picture, I am there. Omnipresence is omnipresence, the presence everywhere. You've got to come to the place where you can look through the picture there and feel that presence. Then you've completed the picture. Then you know the presence within yourself and within the enemy. Then you know the presence within yourself and within your friends. Then you know the presence within yourself and within your family. Then you know omnipresence. Now, it came to me, and it was powerful, and I read it to you. I'll read it again in my journal here on March 20th, 2015. I didn't feel this to the degree I felt it in this meditation. I in the midst of me means I in the midst of me everywhere, every when. I in the midst of omnipresent me's. One me, omnipresent in the invisible. Therefore, when you're in prayer, make sure it is knowing I in the midst of everywhere, omnipresent me. Not a personal me. You haven't got one. Now that was really powerful because I saw, wait a minute, it's not just a matter of knowing I am omnipresent. It's not a matter of knowing this omnipresent I is right here within me, because it's within all me's everywhere, simultaneously. Why? Because there is no personal me there. And if I would do what my father says and pray for my enemies first, then I'd have to come to the same realization. Not only is I in the midst of me, but I is in the midst of me out there, whatever that me appears to be doing. So, he says, well, he says, recognize me in the midst of all, and I greet you through those you thought were your enemies. It is I am that I am, the life of your enemy, the life of your friend. I am the life of all. Now, he says, it is not announcing that God is present in you, separate and apart from everyone else. And I know we do that sometimes. Here's this beautiful presence in my meditation, but my neighbor, would you just be quiet over there? Right? And I'm feeling this wonderful presence, but him, that's a problem. You see, now that's why I have him the problem. Because I only have half a principle. I'm recognizing I in the midst of me, but there's no I in the midst of that one. Something wrong with that. That's not a complete picture. I've got to complete the picture. In my worst enemy, I've got to look him right in the face, that horrible person, and recognize there, right there, where that picture appears, where that concept appears, there is an I. And if I can, in my meditation, commune with that I and feel that I will reveal itself. Then let's see what happens to the picture out there. You want to do world work? This is what it involves. Set aside a period each day to recognize the I where your enemy appears and to feel that I presence, that omnipresent everywhere, in every me, and rest in it until you have that inner experience. And in this way, you may release your enemy. And he'll say more about that in here. It's not announcing that God is present in you, separate and apart from all others. It is announcing that this I is present in you, present in me, present in him, present in her, present in it. You are recognizing the universal presence of God. Yes, but it must be an experience, not a thought. You have to step into the awareness, the conscious awareness. He says it. It's a specific act. And the specific act is to commune with I in the midst of you. And then the specific act is to commune with I in the midst of everyone, everywhere. I in the midst of you, the enemy, you, the friend, you, the family, you, the you. I in the midst of everywhere me's. So he says here, I in the midst of you am where you are. I in the midst of you am where your friends are. I in the midst of you am where your enemies are. Whether you are looking into the face of your friend or the face of your foe, be not afraid. It is I, omnipresence. Now, when that becomes an experience, you will see the picture out here change. And if enough of you do it, you can heal a part of the world. You bring this I into tangible expression only in the degree of your conscious awareness of it. There must be action. There must be a conscious action, an activity of your consciousness. You see that? You do, don't you? I know you do. Now is the day in which I recognize the Spirit of God present within me, and you, my friends, and you, my enemies. I recognize God in the midst of all. I greet the God in them, and they in turn recognize the God in me. Now, it is said, and it is a principle uttered by the I, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me. When you look through that picture of an enemy, and you lift up the I by your conscious awareness of it, and your conscious feeling that I in omnipresent me's, when you feel that I everywhere present, omnipresent as all the me's, when you commune with that I, you will lift up the I right there, and something will change. Without such an unfoldment, or without meditation, such an unfoldment cannot come, because it has to come from within. But how can it come if there are not periods of quiet, of rest, of confidence, of assurance, periods of listening to this I? Yes, it can't. It has to start somewhere. It started for me in my meditation chair with a copy of The Art of Meditation, in which I read until something called to me, and then I closed the book. I contemplated it until contemplation came to an end, and suddenly there was a stillness, and suddenly there was a movement, and I felt this omnipresent I within myself, and I knew, yes, I am here within me. But it was quite a while before I could see I in my enemies, and I had to work. I had to take and consciously become aware. I had to have a conscious act within my consciousness of seeing through the concept, knowing that I was seeing a concept, and standing still so that God could reveal I there too. Okay? Then that completes the picture, and you have omnipresence. You don't any longer have a present that's everywhere and that's within you. You have omnipresence itself. All right, so the activity of meditation within changes the without, and that's what we're talking about. He says meditation is an activity. It's not a laziness, not physical or mental. Even though others looking at us in meditation may think we are trying to escape from the world, we are not trying to escape. We are trying to meet the reality of the world which is within us. There is a presence, and this presence is within me to instruct me and to give me light. This part's important. I glory not in the fruit on my tree, but in the Spirit of God in me, which is the fabric of the fruit which is to appear. Yes, we are told to love not the world. That means don't love the supply, don't love the health, don't love the companions. Love spirit, love that omnipresence. And you can. You can love it once you have that capital E experience. You can't help. Oh, when you're resting back in the everlasting arms and you feel that, you feel yourself enfolded by grace, and love is flowing to the Father and back to you, You can't help it. You can't help it. There's nothing but love. You're floating on the sea of love, which is God. But then you have to look out there and say, and that enemy, that vicious, horrible, appearing person, that's the concept that world mind wants me to see. But what is there? Let me feel that eye that is there. And then you commune with the same eye, which is omnipresence here and there. And then you know, well, I'll be. It's true. I am the way. Always within me is the essence, the substance, the fiber, the fabric of that which is to appear externally. Our conscious recognition of this is what makes available to us the presence of the Spirit of God within us. And that's the whole secret right there. You must live and move and have your being in this omnipresence. It may be only 3 times a day. It may linger longer. It may be for hours at a time. Sometimes it'll last for days. Eventually it'll be a permanent dispensation, a permanent consciousness. The more we turn away from a personal sense and turn towards the Father's house, the closer we get to home, which is home in thee. And then we learn to see it there, where the enemy appears, and the friend, and the family. Then we truly know that there is one presence, and it is omnipresent. Turn from the problem to I. Yes, over and over we hear that. No answer to that out there. Stand stock still and listen. He says, all you can do is turn from the problem in the realization that I within you is the solution to the problem, and then wait, which is where that scripture came from, wait upon the Lord. Yes, wait. I wait upon the Lord, and I mount up with wings as eagles. Wait in your meditation. Okay, I'll start again. All you can do is turn from the problem in the realization that I within you is the solution to the problem. And then wait in your meditation until you do feel that presence. Now listen, when you do feel that presence, loose the problem and let it go. Do not let the problem come back into your mind. Keep it out. You have released it onto the I that you are, the I within you. And then a day or 2 or 3 days later, you will watch how it has solved the problem in a way you could never have understood or accomplished. Yes, in a way ye know not of. And this is the whole secret. That paragraph I just read you there, that's the whole entire secret to my life. When I was stuck in Houston and the car wouldn't start, that's exactly what I did right there. Only I'm thankful to say it didn't take a day or 2 or 3 later. It was instantaneous. And the car started. And that's what I did when my toe turned black. And it did take a day or 2 or 3 later, and it disappeared and turned pink again. And this is when the doctor said, well, we're going to have to cut that off. Now, I also applied this principle when I found out, or when my wife ran off with another person. And I felt very alone. I felt like a failure. And then when I could get past that personal, those personal feelings, and come into the beautiful experience that God is everywhere, and I fell in love with that omnipresence itself. I just fell head over heels in love with it. And I love it now. And I know that that is my true identity. Now, when I fell in love with that, then I was able to pray the real prayer. Father, fulfill thyself. And that took more than a day or 2 or 3. That took a couple of years, and then that appeared as that presence appeared as the perfect spouse for me. No, I don't mean she's perfect, but she's perfect for me. Now, he says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Where two or more are gathered in the recognition of this I as omnipresence. And so your world work is to know that these, is to first know the first half, that I in the midst of thee am omnipresence. And then the second half is to know I in the midst of thee out there, that enemy, where that enemy is appearing, I in the midst of them am also this I in the midst of me. One omnipresence, and then be still about it. And let this, well, wait, as he says. And then release it. Let it go, and don't let it come back to mind. Let us work together on this. Everyone hearing this, let's work on this next week. Myself, I have meditations. Let's see, I'm in the eastern United States, and I have meditations at about 9 in the morning. I start earlier, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You can find me in my meditation chair for a while. And then 9 in the morning. And then I'm usually busy in the daytime, so probably about 8 o'clock at night. Now, that doesn't mean I don't take little 1 and 2 minute meditations as I'm driving and walking and talking and sitting and working at the computer. But for the longer ones, it's usually 3 in the morning, 9 in the morning, 8 at night, and maybe 12 at night. Okay? Or I guess that'd be 12 in the morning. So, if you want to join, let's set aside one period, whatever else we do in meditation, to know that this presence, this omnipresence, is the I of me. And where that enemy appears, I am there too. And it's the I of you. And so I am omnipresent everywhere. And then rest in it and let it reveal itself. And then release whatever that picture has been. Release it. Okay? Let's do that. Now, he says, remember to release God in the sense of realizing consciously that no evil has its source in God and that nothing that does not emanate from God has power. That's nice. I like that. Nothing that does not emanate from God has power. And so that picture does not emanate from God. And so it has no power. The only power, the only presence is omnipresence. Omnipresence, I. And now I will be still until I feel that omnipresent I. He says, in that same meditation, also release all mankind from the penalty of their sins. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Friends or foes, they may be the sins of your nation or the sins of another nation. But there must be a release, and it must be a conscious activity within you. See, that's the point. You say you want to die to a personal sense of self, then you better die to a personal sense of life, and a personal sense of friend, and a personal sense of family, and a personal sense of enemy. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Whatever error still lurks in me, Father, forgive me. In this way, then, we take all power out of the erroneous or evil nature of the world. When we release God, it is as if we were releasing the power of evil itself into nothingness. Okay, so on the final page, he says, as we release every individual, we are fulfilling the Lord's prayer. Father, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Yes. We have said that we want to love. We want to be instruments for love. Is this going to be conditional? You'll only be instruments of love for your friends? Or is this going to be universal love, where you can actually pour out love to your enemy? Can you pour out love to the terrorist? I wonder, can you be that impersonal? You can if you know that the terrorist isn't there. That right there where that picture appears to be is I, omnipresence. And if you feel that presence, then you'll be a part of the solution, a part of the healing of this world. He says here, we bear false witness every day. Yes, every time you see a family member that you love, every time you see a friend that you love, every time you see an enemy that you fear or hate, you're bearing false witness. Because if there's only Christ there, if there's only this omnipresence and you feel it, and you have a conscious activity where you recognize it here and there, then there's nothing. Well, that is an act of love, because you're lifting up the eye. Only that's a spiritual act of love. And that takes form. What form, you cannot know until you've done the conscious activity. All right, so he says, we are not forgiven our sins except as we forgive those who sin against us or against the world. And this is how you do it. If you have wondered, it's a conscious act within you. Finally, he says, above all, be not afraid. Be not afraid, for it is I. And once you feel I here within you, and I over there too, and I omnipresent, the fears begin to fall. I in the midst of thee am mighty, and I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Only be not afraid. Be not afraid. It is I. So now we understand when he says this chapter is called I Speaks. We understand now that that has to be a very real experience within us. First, we have to have the I declaring itself within us. That's where we start. It's very powerful, sometimes a little scary, but it always brings with it a sense of peace. But that's not far enough. Now we have to make a conscious act, a conscious activity within our consciousness of knowing, realizing, accepting, feeling I over there. I omnipresent in every me everywhere and every when. Sometimes you catch a glimpse of I, the I of your being, in the 1800s, or 1600s, or 1500s, or 1200s. And maybe, if you're really proficient, you experience I in the 3000s. The point is that at first you hear I speak and reveal itself within your being, and you're able to rest and relax. Ah, yes, I live, yet not I. Now I live. I am the life. I am the way. I, the omnipresence itself. But then you take the second step, and that's the act of commitment. Am I willing to see I over there where the enemy appears, where the friend appears, where the family appears? Am I able to let go of the good and the bad? Am I able to release it? As he says, release it. Loose him and let him go. And then watch as the eye is lifted up, right there. Watch that eye come forth out of the tomb of humanhood. Well, if I am, then I'm able to, well, then I'm ready. I'm ready to die completely, that I, omnipresence, may live. Thank you so much for the series of talks. I've had feedback, and people have said that they've seen and felt the eye in a way that they never have before. And that's really wonderful to me. Really, really wonderful. And I'm so grateful that you pulled these talks out. You pulled them out of my consciousness, because if there was no one here, well, maybe it would talk anyway. I don't know, but I don't think so. It feels to me as if you listening pull these talks out. And so I am grateful because, well, I love this omnipresence. I said it before. And I love to be in it. I love to feel it. I love to know it. I love to see what it does as it goes before me to prepare a place. And so thank you, and blessings be unto us, which is really I, omnipresence.